Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, I'm so excited for today's conversation with Gary Thomas. Gary's the author of many books, like so many books. But today we are talking about a couple that he has revised and re-released. They are 9 Essential Conversations Before Saying I Do, The Sacred Search, and A Lifelong Love. These books are incredible, and I'm so excited for y'all to dig into these in today's conversation. We're talking all about marriage, how to lean in when your marriage is healthy, and how to find help when your marriage is not, and even some really, really great dating and pre-marriage advice that he gives us. It's just so, so good. I really love today's conversation, and I know you will too. So friend, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with the incredible Gary Thomas. Gary, thank you so much for hanging out with me this morning.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
This is so much fun. Okay, first, before we die, because I'm like, let's go. But first, what's in your cup? What are you drinking?
I am squeezing out the last remnants of an iced venti chai from Starbucks.
So that sounds delicious.
I'm into Starbucks chai, which my wife wishes I wasn't. She keeps trying to give me alternatives that are healthier, which for her means less sugar. Yeah. And so I kind of mix them and whatnot. But I've been a chai guy for 15, 20 years now.
They're so good. Do you ever make them at home?
I do every morning. Okay. It just got too expensive.
Yes. Our rule in our home, we have a nice espresso machine. And our rule is if we can make it at home, we're not allowed to buy it out.
Oh, well, see, but I usually go to Starbucks when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
Traveling. So today I had to get a run in right before I actually did a funeral. I don't mean to start off on that message,
yes.
But it's the life of a pastor. I had to rush out the door and
that's right.
Hit Starbucks for breakfast.
I understand. One other little thing about me, Gary, is I'm a pastor's kid.
So I get that life.
I really do. I think it was my oldest son asked me how many funerals I had been to. And I was like, so many, just because it's part of the job. Like, the family, we're always there. So, when you're out and about, you always just get an iced chai. That's your go-to.
Well, if it's earlier in the morning, I'll always start out with a hot chai.
Nice. Okay.
But I'm in Houston right now. It heats up pretty quickly, and so I'll switch to the ice at various times. But when I'm making it at home, it's always the hot.
Always the hot. I'm also in Texas. I'm in New Braunfels.
Oh, wow. Great.
So we're neighbors almost, just a couple hours. We love New Braunfels. We love Houston, too. But Houston feels like as soon as you – there's a line in Texas where as soon as you cross over, you're underwater all of a sudden because you're in Houston.
Well, when I moved here from the Pacific Northwest, my wife would still claim to be a Seattle girl. That's her identity, Pacific Northwest. And I just didn't realize how – huge Texas is. I mean, it's the stuff of jokes, right? But so when we first got here, the first year, my son was at Notre Dame, and then one of their playoff game or bowl game that year was in El Paso. So I thought, hey, El Paso, Texas. I'm in the state. Graham can come. And then I find out El Paso is from Houston, about as far as San Francisco is from Seattle. So I meant Sacramento. So it's like, no, it's not that close. It's in the same state, but it's a long ways away.
It's a long ways. We moved out of Alaska, so same, like northwest or up in the north, and moved down here. And it was like, we love to travel. So we'll be in Texas and we'll just go. Like, we'll go. And it's like 7 hours any direction just to get out. It's like, it makes it really hard to travel. Oh, that's so fun. Okay, I'm so excited because you have revised a couple of your books that are just incredible resources for so many of us. What made you want to revise these books?
Well, when you've lived with the book for a while, it's always a blessing to be able to hone in on the real message. What's the contribution of this book? Today, to be honest, revising a book usually means shortening it.
Okay.
Just with blog posts, literally, brain science has shown it, that people want shorter and shorter books, shorter and shorter chapters. So
yeah,
they've been cut down, which really makes me try to focus on what's the essential message. It's always fun to get back because you get a chance to rethink it. It had been probably 7 years since Sacred Search had come out, and a little mm-hmm. bit less than that than A Lifelong Love. And then for the premarital guide, that was, having worked with so many couples working through it, helped me refine the questions and figure out, well, I never asked that question anyway, and that question never helps. So adding new questions that hopefully will make it a better resource.
I love that. It's so interesting to me too, because you think about that brain science and you think about shorter chapters, and I'm a person who loves to read a chapter of a book every morning. And sometimes I'm like, well, this chapter's 30 pages.
There are no 30-page chapters in these new books. I guarantee you that.
I love that. That's so good. Okay, so A Lifelong Marriage and Sacred Search. Those are A Lifelong Love and A Sacred Search are the two books that you've repackaged. Like you said, they're 7 and a little bit less years. I have a friend who says sometimes when we publish books, by the time they're out, 2 years later even, there's always something in the book that we're like, oh, well, I maybe don't agree with that anymore. Is there anything like that you got to revisit with these books?
No, not really. With The Sacred Search, that's a book for singles. It's about helping you make a wise marital choice. And my kids had read it, and they kind of gave me a hard time saying, Dad, you have too many deal breakers in there. I would say as couples, if you disagree, that's a deal breaker. They said, eventually you have to be able to get married. And I realized maybe the first time I was a little bit too idealistic, but I think, when you've worked in ministry for a while and you see the difficulties couples face after marriage, you want them to work through these issues beforehand and really make sure going in. And so I hope I didn't tone it down too much. I did try to be a little more hopeful. I'm a huge fan of marriage. If I had 100 lives, I'd want to be married in every one of them. But I do believe it's important that people be thoughtful about that one choice they get to make.
Yeah, I told you before we started recording that I got married at 18. And there was really no, I don't want to say there's no thoughtfulness about it. But at 18, like, what thoughtfulness was there about it, right? Like, what did I know? But I'm so thankful for my husband. He's it was a wise choice for me to marry him. And I'm so thankful for that. But at 18, I didn't understand what I was looking for. I saw this guy who was going to provide for me, who's going to take care of me as best I knew. And I jumped, which, again, it's turned out very, very well. We have had to learn a lot in our marriage. And one of our biggest things has been to grow up together so we don't grow apart. And I know you said your wife got married. You guys were younger when you got married, too. So tell me, how have you put that into practice?
Well, we went through the exact same thing. I was 22. Lisa was almost 20. I always put it that way because I don't want to admit my ideal self that I married a teenager. And the fact of the matter is, if you believe that life begins at conception as I do, technically she wasn't a teenager. She'd just passed that mark. So, but I think it was very true for us. In fact, I don't think I could have written my first married book that made what I do possible, Sacred Marriage, without it. It talks about the difficulties of marriage and how God uses a difficult marriage to shape us into the person that more closely resembles Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so some of that just came out of, at the time, people were trying to say, well, apply these 5 principles of Jesus and marriage is easy. And I just said, you know what? The more I talk to people, I don't think any marriage is easy. I mean, I think there are healthy marriages and unhealthy marriages and functional marriage and dysfunctional marriages. But even the healthiest marriages, it's not an easy task. I've done 14 marathons. Some were easier than others.
Yeah.
And some were actually pretty pleasant most of the way through, but none of them were completely easy. So I think that's a good analogy. But I love the image you just presented. If we see marriage as a chance to be shaped, to understand, to grow in our ability to love, and one of the three legs of the stool I talk about in A Lifelong Love is understanding our desperate need to learn how to love. And marriage provides a great place to do that. Raising kids does as well. But I got married that young, and I don't know if you were from the same persuasion, but I thought my greatest need was to be loved. And I thought I'd found somebody who would love me like I wanted to be loved. And I believe back then God would have looked at my situation from 180 degrees differently, saying, Gary, you can't be loved more than you are. I sent my son to die on your cross. I've given you my Holy Spirit. You are loved completely and totally. Therefore, your greatest need is to learn how to love. And marriage provides me with an opportunity every day. And if I become convinced that that's my greatest need, I value some of the aspects of marriage that I used to resent. Why do I have to go through this again and again? And why do I have to learn to understand this? And why is this being asked of me? But when I look at Scripture, there are dozens of passages that talk about loving extravagantly. Love even your enemies. Paul commends the Thessalonians because their love for each other is increasing. There isn't a single verse about our greatest need being to find someone to romantically love us.
Yeah.
And so when I became convinced my greatest need is to learn how to love, I really began to look at marriage in a different way and value marriage a whole lot more, because it really is just an excellent school to help us do just that.
Yes, absolutely. And I know you have a great book on friendship as well. And one of the things I've learned about friendship lately is, while we believe that friendship is this luxury in our lives, or it's, you know, something that can be tossed off quickly because we're too busy for friendship, I've looked at friendship more lately in a view of, like, how can I serve my people? Because when I serve somebody else, it's then fulfilling me. But also there's this dichotomy too. I guess that might be the wrong word, but like, if I serve and love my people well, I will be served and loved well, I think. And it's not always that way, but it is. Just looking at friendship for me was this great switch of, like, I'm going to serve you because I love you. And I think it's the same in marriage.
Yeah. Now I'm a generation past you.
Yeah.
People can't see me if my voice sounds younger. I'm in my late 50s. So, but what I found, And I don't know if you're finding this, there was a time when my kids were young, about the age your kids are, where my friendships weren't as deep. I still had good friendships, but I had to focus so much on my kids and my wife and my job. Looking back, I don't regret that at all. But now I would say it's been the strongest period of my life with male friendships.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a circling number where I'm calling every day to have a significant conversation with one of them. It's been one of the great joys to me of being an empty nester, having time to renew those friendships. And I agree. I think every study shows this. A healthy person is a person who has healthy friendships.
I love that so much. And I think that it's important for us to have friendships that we trust within when it comes to our marriages as well. Like, I know that I have people that I can go to and say, Jesse is the worst. And then be like, okay, well, how are you serving him? How are you loving him? Also, was that really a big deal, Jeanette? Which, I need those people in my life, right? We need people that are going to tell us the truth.
Yeah. Well, I had one time, I vacationed with one of my best friends. Our families were vacationing together. And he saw a moment that has probably been one of the more bigger frustrations that Lisa and I have had with each other. And he saw it. He goes, yeah, I see it. He goes, but buddy, I hold you responsible for this reason. And he showed me how I was contributing to that, where my weaknesses and flaws exacerbated a tendency on the part of my wife. And those are the best kind of friends.
Yeah.
Where you can basically, they love you. They go, yeah, I empathize. But you know what? You can do this a little bit better.
Yeah, it's so good. I love that.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by...
Hey, I want to break in real quick to tell you about a company and a product that I absolutely love. I've always loved having my nails done, and I really prefer to do them at home because, you know, like cost and convenience and all. I've used everything from the high-end polish to the nail stickers to press-ons, and they've all just missed the mark for me. Until now. Last year, I found Olive & June. Olive & June is a nail company that teaches you how to give the perfect at-home mani and pedi. They want you to feel beautiful, and they give you the perfect tools and polish to do so. They want you to have the best-looking hands and toes out there. Their nail polish is top-notch, and I personally had manicures last well past 10 days with little to no chipping. And don't even get me started on my pedicures. They last forever. I mean, come on. Their cuticle serum has stopped me from anxiously picking at my hands, and their nail strengthener has changed the shape of my nails. With some of the best, brightest colors, really any polish color that would ever fit your fancy, think that you would really like Olive & June. If you want to check it out, head to oliveandjune.com, and for 20% off your order, use code JeanetteT20. That's JeanetteT20, the number 20. Let me know what colors you pick, or if you need any help choosing, hit me up in DMs. I'll help you. Okay, now back to this week's episode. How do you feel when you look at marriages and when you look at this new self-help, and it's probably not new, but again, I'm getting older, so I'm seeing more self-helpy stuff. How are you seeing that change marriages when it's very, very I-focused? Like, I'm an independent woman, or I don't need to be dependent on you. I don't want to be codependent. I want to focus on me, and I'm strong. How are you seeing that I change marriages, I think, for the worse? But tell me your thoughts on that.
I think it's devastating. If somebody's coming from that perspective, they would hate my books. My whole motivation is really seeing our marriage as an act of worship for the God who created us. I talk about how my marriage was transformed when I felt like God was challenging me. Lisa isn't just your wife. She's my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I expect you to treat her accordingly. And Jen, when I think of all that I owe God, not just my life, the fact that he made me a human instead of a squirrel. I mean, my family laughs when I say, but he could, or I'll see a cow standing out in the rain, chewing grass, living for a few years and then becoming somebody's dinner. I mean, I get to be a human who knows beauty and truth and laughter and friendship, like we talked about, and chais in the morning. And then as a, not just a human, but as a Christian, knowing the presence of the Holy Spirit, the glory of God, just all of the things that God has provided for me. And then he says, okay, Gary, here's my daughter. Mm-hmm. One of the things that will please me the most is if you will love her like she's never been loved and never will be loved. Now, I have a wonderful wife to love. She's my sister in Christ. But if she was a particularly difficult woman, which she's not, but even if she was, I would owe so much to her father that it would be a joy to love her like that just because of that. And the reason I think that's important, James 3:2 says we all stumble in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I just ask people to consider the words all and many. James is saying there isn't anybody you can be married to who doesn't stumble in many ways. All of us do. Nobody gets to marry the fourth member of the Trinity. That person doesn't exist. And then he says they stumble in many ways. It's literally the Bible promising us this is not an easy person to love. They're going to find creative ways to make life difficult for you. So if we love based on human motivation, I love you because you're worthy to be loved. I loved you because you're kind to me. I love you. Well, there are going to be times when they're not kind to you. There's going to be times when they don't feel like they're worthy to be loved. And that's why I love being married out of motivation of worship, because God does deserve to be served always. God does deserve to always be reverenced. And when I love my wife out of reverence for him, I've got a motivation greater than my sin and her sin. This doesn't mean it's drudgery that I tell my wife, well, you're not very nice, but I'm going to love you because God loves me. I mean, you can take it too far, because I also wrote a book on cherishing where I think it's important for my wife to feel cherished. But for the bedrock truth, what's held my marriage together, I think those two truths, viewing God as my heavenly father-in-law and believing that one of my greatest needs is to learn how to love, That's what fuels my marriage, not what I need, not what I'm becoming. It really is a spiritual foundation for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that's beautiful. How does your wife walk alongside you in this? Because you are like pouring it all out, learning, writing the books, and she's like, cool, let's live this out.
Well, the fortunate, because people will often ask her, because she travels a lot with me. And what I've loved, because they'll say, what is it? She goes, look, Gary lives it out. She goes, I couldn't stand to go with him. I'm really grateful that I see him trying to live it out. She goes, except for one of his books. I wrote a book called Everybody Matters about healthy eating and living. And she thinks I could do better there. My wife may be the healthiest eater in the world. And the fact that I begin my morning with a chai that has sugar in it is, you know, despicable. And so she'll bring these bhakti chai, which is really good. It has zero sugar, things like that. And so now I mix it in with mine. So
yeah, just a little bit.
I'm thankful that she does it. And we laugh about it at times. To be honest, I think one of the things I love most about my life, when I do a marriage seminar, it reminds me of those truths. Because my memory is so short, I need to be reminded. I mean, I'm preaching to myself. I don't know that anybody can corner the market on marriage. Maybe some people have. I certainly haven't. And I like those reminders. And then we laugh about it. You know, the subtitle of Sacred Marriage is, what if God designed marriage to make us holy more than to make us happy? And Lisa said on occasion, look, I need happy right now, all right? I'll deal with holy later.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
but we look at it as a fun journey. We want to get the most out of it. And I think it means a lot to me because I think about marriage so much and read about marriage so much and talk about marriage so much. I think it does help me want to get the most out of this human relationship that we can. And I've been grateful for that.
Yeah, I love that. I know that we've been in seasons. I mean, we've been married for a long time, even just for our age. But we've been in seasons where it's been like really fun to be married and we love marriage. And then there's been seasons where it's like we're staying married. So high five there. And there's also been seasons where we've been the best of friends but have lacked intimacy. So I feel like we've weathered all of these seasons really well, but it still means we've weathered these seasons.
Right.
What do you tell couples like that, like in that moment of like, hey, you stay together and that's really, really good. And then there's that moment of like, we have to seek the Lord together because otherwise this doesn't last. So I don't know if that really makes sense as a question, but like, how do we navigate these seasons with children in the mix, with changing lives in the mix, like all of those things? I know it's probably not a equation like A, B, C, done, but what would your advice be there?
Well, we've been through all those seasons and probably a couple more. And to be honest, a lot of those seasons are very predictable.
Yeah.
If you look at longitudinal studies, I've freaked some couples out. They'll come into my office as a pastor. I can just ask how long they've been married, how old their kids are, and I'll predict the issue. And their jaws can drop. Yeah, because I'll just say, you know, here's the thing. Most couples in your situation are going to face that. This is predictable. And so suddenly it's almost like, oh, okay. It's not like this is a, I said, if you want to be married more than 7 years, you got to go through this season.
Yeah.
If you want to be married more than 15 years, you got to go through this season. So you might as well go through it together.
Yeah.
Because you can. And I believe that the wonderful thing about this is that a good marriage isn't something you find. It's something you make.
Yeah.
And you have to keep making it. It's not like planting a tree. That's the image I used to have of marriage. You plant a tree. At the start, you have to protect it. You put a fence around it so the deer don't get it. You fertilize it. You water it. Maybe you have to have a stake to support it. 5 years in, that tree is strong enough. You're not worried about anything hurting it. And a lot of us do that. We do premarital counseling. We read a couple, we go on a fun honeymoon. We read a couple marriage books. You might even go to a marriage conference. And then it started to grow. We could just forget about it. We can raise kids. We can succeed in our job. We can have other friends. But I found that not to be true. I think the better image of marriage is building a brick house that you build brick by brick. And the thing is, it doesn't finish itself. If you stop putting those bricks up there, not only does it not stand, it falls apart. An unfinished house is always susceptible to the elements of living in a fallen world. Now, that sounds like an obligation, but here's the hope. If you've stopped building your house, you can start building it again. Right. Just because it's dissatisfying now doesn't mean it needs to be dissatisfying 5 years from now. Intimacy is something that is chosen and built and has to be rebuilt. Too often when couples get into those bad seasons, they think, well, maybe we were never a good match.
Right.
Maybe we just, we've grown apart. Well, then grow back together. I really believe, Jeanette, two people who loved each other enough to consider marriage, there had to be some degree of liking each other, surrendered to the Holy Spirit, motivated by the love of God, can build a really good marriage. Even if they're not compatible in all the seemingly important areas, I think God can provide enough for two people who are pursuing that. And I've seen people just have bad memories. Some said, well, I don't think I ever really loved him. And especially these are my friends where I knew him before. Oh, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
you really did. You ignored all of us because you loved him so much. You loved her so much. But, you know, you start to put on these glasses of contempt. You get frustrated and angry and bitter. And then you just can't see the good anymore. Those glasses of contempt can be taken off. The relationship can be rebuilt and renewed. But some seasons you just have to go through. The funeral I did today, a man buried his 38-year-old daughter. He starts chemotherapy in 3 days. Just let that sink
in. Yeah.
What is it like for a man? He buries a daughter, which you never want to have to do, 3 days before you go through the chemotherapy. So what do you say to make makeup? You can't. You got to get through that season.
Yeah.
Now, he's going to be a deeper person. He's going to be a stronger person. But to suspect that you can enjoy that season is just not true to life. And when you've got little kids and a baby and a toddler together and physical intimacy becomes difficult, you're so tired, you've got so many demands and stresses, it's just not fair to evaluate your marriage. If you're evaluating your marriage when you have small kids and a baby, it's like trying to evaluate your fitness running up a mountain in Aspen, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
High altitude, going up a mountain. It doesn't mean you're not in shape. It just means you're in a difficult climate.
Yeah. I think that's so good because I think you're right. So often when seasons get hard, there is that questioning of like, well, is this even worth it anymore? Is the battle that we're fighting even valid? And then when you look at it that way, then it even gets uglier. It's like, do I even want to fight this anymore? Or my life would be so much better if, and those are the things those are like why we need people around us. And we can say like, hey, I'm really struggling, or, I remember in one of our darkest seasons, I mean, I had just had our middle child and Ezekiel was probably two. So two and a baby, like that's where we were at. And I was like, I'm not even like remotely happy. And my friend goes, well, of course you're not. Like you're just like pouring out. And she goes, but let me tell you will never find a man who loves you as much as Jesse loves you. He will fight for you. He will go to bat for you. You have to work on you. And it was beautiful advice because I needed to figure out who, not even who I was, because I don't want to get into that self-helpy language, but I needed to like kind of rest. I needed a nap. I needed a nap.
Probably a good meal and a good workout.
That's
right. And strength to do the workout. I did it one time as a conference. I just wanted to put this into perspective for people. It was a big conference. There were 500 couples there. And so I had everybody stand up and I said, I want you to remain standing if marriage proved to be easier than you thought it would be. Five couples remain standing. Now, I'm an English major and I can do that. That's 1%. But it was actually less than that because one couple came up afterwards and said, Gary, we have a confession to make. And I said, what's that? Well, we're one of the couples that stood up or stayed standing. I said, Anne, we've only been married 10 days.
Oh.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So probably less than 1%. But this notion that if you choose the right person, marriage is supposed to be easy through all the seasons is such a destructive lie. And I've seen people leave good husbands and good wives because of that momentary downturn. And so I hope if anybody's listening, know that sometimes you just have to go through these seasons. In fact, there's a fascinating book, A Case for Marriage, where they were talking to thousands of couples who are experiencing severe or very severe marital dissatisfaction. So, I mean, when you hear very severe, I'm thinking they have a lawyer on retainer. I mean, that, they followed them up 5 years later. Of those that stayed married, over 80% now said they were satisfied or very satisfied in their marriage relationship. Those who got a divorce and were trying to seek out someone else, less than 20%, I think it's somewhere around 17, said they were currently satisfied with their romantic relationship, however it was, which just shows you the cyclical nature of relationships. Even if you're dissatisfied, your best chance to become happy is to stay where you are and work through it and grow back together rather than to just obliterate the family and try to start over. I'm not talking about issues like abuse or rampant infidelity, those things. Please, I don't you can generalize in a way that's hurtful. Mm-hmm. But when it's the normal stresses of life, those can be worked through. And when they are, you grow closer because you remember it. And, you know, especially since we both got married so young, when Lisa and I grew up together, I mean, nobody could possibly replace her. Right. You know, our first house, our first child, the first child leaving for college, the medical crisis, our first grandchild now. I mean, all of those things.
Yeah.
The first book that was published. I mean, all of those things, nobody else could possibly come close to that.
Yeah. And rewriting that next history, it would be fine. I know second marriages thrive and everything's great later on in life, sometimes, most time too, but it's hard. It's hard because there's always a comparison thing. And we have some dear friends who are on their second marriage and we are their cheerleaders. We are their, you know, we are their go to bat with them. And one of the biggest things we say is there's no comparison. You cannot compare. It's not healthy to compare. It's not fair to compare because there are 15 plus years of memories with this other person. And you guys have been together for 3 years. So
yes,
don't.
Well,
don't.
And studies show, look, if you're in a second marriage, this is for you. Studies show the difficulty is that when you are married to someone for a certain amount of time, your brains start to form around each other. Mm-hmm. It's just the way our brains operate. We interact and you have certain patterns. Yeah. And so even though you get a divorce legally, neurochemically, you still got these grooves and patterns in your mind of how your marriage works. Yeah. So when you get remarried, you might have a spouse who says something or you might say something and your spouse seems to respond all out of proportion. And you're like, what just went on there? And what happens is that you had this fight with your first spouse and you said something that triggered them. And then they go, well, I know where this goes and that goes and that. So they go to 10, they skip all of the stages.
Yeah.
And so you have, well, that's not what I meant at all. So you kind of still have to untangle yourself from that first marriage so that you can give yourself fully to your spouse. So I plead with people on a second marriage. You need grace and understanding. You need to listen and not accuse. I agree with you. I've seen some couples that have just precious second marriages, but it takes more work than a first marriage in that sense, because you have to keep letting go of the past.
Yeah.
Because there was something bad in that past that made you want to leave it. Either you were hurt or you did the hurting, or it was a mixture of both. You've got to learn new patterns while still trying to, I guess, scrape off the skin of your old marriage. That's kind of a vivid imagery, but
that's what we've seen too. And so even for second marriages, or even, I mean, especially for first marriages, you have the 9 essential conversations before you say I do. These are beautiful questions that walk people through like preparation for marriage. What are some of these conversations or topics that are skipped that we don't need to be skipping?
Yeah. Well, some that people think are just extreme, but we have them share credit reports.
Oh,
so you're not just marrying each other. You're marrying each other's credit. And if there's any hesitancy about sharing my credit report with a prospective spouse, why? I mean, what is there they're trying to hide? So we go through that. How do you resolve conflict? Mm-hmm. What is your view of marriage? You know, I might say I want to go exercise. And my wife said, great, I want to go exercise. If she wants to lift weights and I want to go for a long distance run, we're both exercising. Those aren't very compatible forms of exercising.
Right.
And so we go through the styles. What does it mean to you to be married? Do you expect to spend most of your evenings and weekends together? Do you stress more being an individual and occasionally coming together? We talk, of course, about sexual issues, in-laws, child rearing, where you want to live. Part of it, Jeanette, I had a couple that spoke to me after a marriage conference. They'd been married 9 months. He was desperate to go to the mission field. His new wife was adamant that she could never leave the United States. She didn't want to leave the hometown that her parents were in. And I'm asking him, you've been married 9 months? He goes, yeah. I go, didn't you talk about this? He said, well, we thought we had. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to remove, is this notion where they think they've talked through these issues, but we know to ask the questions, the penetrating ones, you know, have you really thought this through? And other questions, like with child rearing, it was like, if you're not able to bear a child, how would you spend everything you have and go into debt to get medical treatment? Or would you prefer adoption, or could you never see yourself adopting or whatnot? It's just trying to get them to think about the things that singles who are in love and infatuated, they just don't cross their mind. But those are the issues that married couples are going to deal with time and time again.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, like we've kind of joked and said, like, I had no idea what even those questions were. And there was something that my dad said that kind of set us up for a failure in a sense. But he spoke over us and he'll be like, I didn't mean it that way. But he said, one of your biggest arguments will always be about money, because I'm a pastor's kid and my husband was not. And so our views on money were very, very different going into marriage. Had I wished my dad said that differently, like, hey, let's talk about how you view money, or how Jesse views money. Let's break this down instead of just like that blanket statement, which anytime we fought about money, I was like, this is why, like, my dad was right and all of those things. But to have a healthy perspective on, like, This is why I hold on to money, or this is why I spend money and stuff like that. Like, would have been a great conversation for us to have, even my senior year of high school.
Well, we asked the couples in there, do you get your greatest joy from earning money, spending money, or saving money?
Yeah,
those are three different things, three entirely different motivations, and it's just helping. Now, it's fine to have a mix as you're coming together, but to understand, okay, this is who I'm marrying, that for this person, he really would prefer to have $5,000 added to investments toward a 401k than to go to Europe. And she might say, you know what, we'll figure out retirement when we get there. We've got good airfare to go to Paris. I'm going to go to Paris. And just helping them navigate that to the point where it's not a source of contention, it's a source of understanding. But yeah, money motivates all of us in different ways. And when you get married, I mean, that is a big topic to understand. What is it about money that motivates you? Does it bring security? Does it bring anxiety? Does it bring guilt for some?
Yeah, that's so good. Just off the top of your head, what are some of the biggest red flags that our single friends should look out for?
Well, I would put addiction near the top of the list.
Yeah.
When somebody is addicted to something, there's not much room for them to love another person.
Yeah.
Eventually by definition, the addiction controls them. They don't have the spiritual and psychological freedom to give, to not be a narcissist. I mean, addictions really kind of turn you into a narcissist. I know this is harsh language, but I mean, marriage is so self-giving and laying yourself down for each other. You can't do that if you have to have this. And what I've seen is when a spouse becomes between an addict and their addiction, there's resentment, there's anger, sometimes even worse. So I really want to see that addictions are dealt with. I want to see past psychological issues, if there's been abuse or just a dysfunctional home, if that's dealt with, because I found it's often the age where these really start to show themselves. I usually put it in the mid-30s. When the kids are young babies and toddlers, it seems like I've seen some women just hold it together and hold it together. And then when the kids get closer to 10 or 11, so there's not that hour by hour need. It's like she's been holding these balls underwater, and eventually her arms are tired and boom, all of a sudden the guy, man, I didn't, they find out who they really married. It's just the way that we are. If we have to hold things together, often we will, but eventually those points of trauma and hurt are going to have to be addressed. So I think those are two big ones. I think spiritual intimacy is so key. If somebody really wasn't into God that much before you got married, I found when they're infatuated, they'll act like they are because they want you to be interested in them and they know that matters to you. And then you get married and all of a sudden they get tired of play acting. Marriage is too long to pretend. And so I'm looking, are you motivated by serving God, or are you into God because your spouse is into God and you're into your spouse and you want them to be into you? It's a very different thing.
Man, I love those. Those are really, really solid red flags for us, for our single friends to look out for. And I think that's so fascinating about what you said about trauma in our 30s, because it is like, I mean, like you just nailed it on the head for me. It was my early 30s, but it was also after we brought Zoe home, dealing with her trauma. And then I was doing some counseling training for her, and the counselor pulled me aside and said, "Hey, would you like to do some counseling?" I was like, "Oh, my trauma's showing." Okay. And so it's so fascinating to me because it is that hour by hour need is no longer there. And like you said, that's holding those balls down. That image I got was a ball popping up and hitting me in the face.
Yes. Yeah. And there should be no shame about it. Trauma is an injury inflicted on your soul that you can't heal. Even if you're a great oral surgeon, you wouldn't perform a root canal on yourself.
Right.
I mean, and I think the same thing with trauma, that it does require professional. There's no guilt or shame about that. It's just wise. And you can cope. I mean, some people cope fairly well their whole life, but I just say, but why? If you want to flourish, you got to deal with those hurts and be set free. It'll not only bless you, it will bless your kids. It will bless your marriage.
Yeah. Gary, one of the last questions I love to ask people is, what is it time for in your life right now? We believe in seasons. Right now it's time for coffee. What is it time for in your own life?
Yeah. It's a time for me to really listen and search. Parenting doesn't end.
What?
I mean, our kids don't live with us.
Right.
But I think two in particular, there's some decisions Lisa and I need to make that feel momentous. And we're just saying, Lord, help us respond with love and understanding and care so we can support them like they want to be supported, like they need to be supported and all of that. And I'm going to be honest, we don't know the answer. I wish I was the Bible answer man that, okay, here's the issue. Here's how I'm supposed to respond. Relationships are usually messier than that. And so we want to love them and love God and find out where that intersects. And to be honest, we're in a season where we just don't really know what that means. And so until we do, we stay silent, but we're listening until we know what we think is appropriate to say and how to say it.
I love that. That's so hard, but good. And I know that there's probably been times in my own life where my parents have had to stay silent and wait for me to ask for help and or what the right answer even was. So I love that you're doing that and you're leading that and modeling that for us just a couple generations or a generation behind.
Yeah, I'm not that old.
You're no. I'm 35. You're just right. You're just right there. We had a fun talk with our boys yesterday about like, what kind of grandparents do you want us to be? So I have a 14, almost 15, 12-year-old, and then our daughter's always 10. So I'm like, what kind of grandparents do you want us to be? Like, how can we have fun as grandparents? And they had some really fun suggestions. So we have to get out of high school and then into college, but someday we're excited for that future step down the road. It was a fun conversation to have with them.
I got to tell you, Jeanette, we have one grandchild and one in utero that will be born in a few months. And Lisa made my day. I was speaking at a marriage conference this last weekend, and my son FaceTimed with his daughter, 2-year-old. We had spent some time with him 2 weeks ago. And my granddaughter saw Lisa, and she's going, Papa, that's her name for me. Where Papa? Where Papa? She just wanted to talk to me. And I was just like, I made my day. If anything could get me off the stage in front of a crowd, it would be a FaceTime call with
that's
my
That's right.
Grandma.
I got to go. I got to go. My dad has told us many times that the only reason to have children is to have grandchildren. Yeah, he loves being a grandpa.
Well, here you go. You're in my office. The listeners can't see that, yes. But this is the big picture of my office I'll put up.
Oh.
It's just a collage of Anna. So
sweet.
Yeah, well, I think we all feel that way.
That's so fun. And I'm excited to be a grandma with my partner. Jesse and I are going to be great grandparents.
It's fun. It's, do you have your name yet? You're way too young to think about your
name. I told them, and they're not on the they're not on it yet, but Jesse thinks he wants to be Paw, and
okay.
Then I would like to be Foxy. Like, I just think it's cute. Like, it's
yeah.
Not grandma. My grandma, like, I've always had Grandma Carr, Grandpa Carr. Like, we've always been very formal. But I was like, no, I want to be Foxy. And they're like, that's so weird. I'm like, no, it's just a name. It's just like a, like, I want my Foxy. Like, it's just, they're like, my one son says, if they call you that, they will get in trouble. Like, whatever. You don't even know yet.
What they don't realize is it's their future wives that will have the biggest say in
That's
what
right.
you get called.
That's right.
With
Which
sons.
Might not be Foxy.
Yeah.
Oh, Gary, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for speaking into our marriages, because I sometimes feel like marriages can look hopeless, and they're not, right? As long as we're willing to turn to the Lord and not just sit in this is hard. Instead,
yeah.
Surrender and sit at the cross.
Well, here's what I love about your show, Jeanette, and why I'm glad you've gathered this tribe, so to speak. You're in the perfect time of life to encourage each other, because we men aren't always that easy to love, particularly at the demographics of those you reach. It could be a busy time for a guy. A lot of ways that we can struggle and go off, and just trying to hold each other together. Let's love God. Let's remind ourselves that family matters. You have your focus on family podcast at time. And
yeah.
I just think it's a great work to encourage each other, that a lot of the struggles you face are common struggles. And if we keep God at the center of them, I really believe at the end of the lives, when your listeners are my age, they'll be glad they're heeding the advice that you're giving them.
Thank you so much. That means the world to me. And I just am so thankful that you forged this trail for us so that we had wisdom.
Thank you.
I've had so many takeaways from today's conversation. This conversation is one I'll go back to time and time again. I hope you will too. I loved Gary's heart for loving our spouses well and honoring God in those things. If you want to check out any of Gary's many books, head over to Amazon. I'll have a few linked in my storefront that's in the link in my bio and the link in this podcast description. Be sure to check them out, and let's have a lifelong love with our spouses. I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.